All right. So I'm told we were holding at the top of Tesdayin Amud Aleph, but I guess we might as well go back to the two dots, Makom HaYisham Amma, eight lines from the bottom of Tesdavavam and Beis, at the beginning of the Inyan. The Mishnah said, Makom HaYisham Amma, the Kohen goes into the Heichel, there's a spot there, a tile, an Amma by an Amma, where he would lift it up, he'd lift up that tile from the floor and take dirt from underneath it to put in the site of water. Pasuk says, Pasuk says that you should take from the dust that there is. So if you just had that, if it didn't say anything about the ground of the Mishkan, you would think all it means is the dirt has to be in the Heichel before it gets placed into the Meis Sofer. So fine, you take a basket full of dirt, you walk into the Heichel with it, and then Now, Talmud Lomar B'Karka HaMishkan, therefore the Pasuk adds that it has to be on the floor of the Mishkan. On the other hand, so you think maybe that means you should start digging with a shovel or an axe or whatever in the ground to dig up dirt. Kadrumas literally means axes. In Shas, it seems that there are times when it means something more like a shovel or a spade or something. Tools were probably a lot more interchangeable then than they are now. They didn't have Home Depot or whatever. Talmud Lomar Ashayi. No, the pasuk says that the dirt has to be there, implying that you don't have to actually go and start digging. It's there already. Meaning, in other words, as opposed to you have to dig and then find dirt that's like not on the surface. Ashayi implies it's already there, available for the taking.
So it must come from outside the Mishkan.
No, so that's the thing. So far we have on the one hand, offer Ashayi implies that it has to be readily available. On the other hand, the Tauka Mishkan implies that it has to be part of the dirt underneath.
Oh, it should be a house, and they have to start digging.
Yeah. Okay. No. Well, that's also true. It has to be loose dirt. But the point is, in other words, are we talking about it has to be readily available? But does it, or is it that it has to be from the ground of the? Yeah. Okay. So how is that? Yes, sham hove. If there is already dirt there, then you just bring that. En sham, if there isn't any dirt there, ten sham, then put some on the ground. Put some on the ground first, and then take it. That's what it
means. Does it say?
There's a difference between the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. In the Beis Hamikdash, that's what we say, that the Mishnah had said, that in the Beis Hamikdash there was a tile there. There was a floor tile that you would pick up, and underneath it you would find dirt. What we're saying is, if there's no dirt there, if there's no loose dirt there or whatever, then what you do is you bring some dirt in from the outside, lift up the tile, put the dirt there, and then now it's there. Now it's part of the flooring under the Mishkan. Here. Now you can take it. Yeah. Whereas if there's dirt there to begin with, then you just take it. Yeah. Then we have a different braisa that said that disagrees with that one, which says as follows. When it says from the dirt that is there, it means that you would actually prepare some dirt outside and then carry it and then carry it in and put it down on the floor of the Mishkan. So in other words, you don't have to put it on the floor. You don't have to put it on the floor of the Mishkan. That's how he learned. One second. That's the Gemara is going to talk about. We have a machlokes over here. That's what we're talking about. So when it says the Chaka Mishkan, that's what we're going to talk about in a minute. The same thing applies in the Mishmikdash. So far, though, if we just had from the first Braille talking about in the Mishkan, let's say for whatever reason there's no loose dirt available there, it so happens that they put that in one of the stations, in one of the places where they camped in the Mishkan, it so happens there's no dirt over there.
No, the Mishkan,
the tiles. The tiles in the Mishmikdash, necessarily.
Yes. They didn't tell them.
So far, in other words, what we have is the first braisa is saying that the dirt has to be placed on the floor there for a little while before you can actually pick it up and take it. Whereas the second braisa is just saying, you could prepare some dirt outside and just bring it into the heichel. You don't actually have to spread it on the floor first.
It can mean something else.
We're not saying sifting. Rashi says, "Ve'en tzarach la'anicha b'karka ha'echol." You don't have to.
So why did you say
b'karka mishkan? I mean, machas mishkan, yeah. Okay, machas b'fnim la'echol. Rashi says, "Ve'en tzarach la'anicha b'karka
ha'echol."
That's
what you're saying. So put it on.
All you have to do is bring it into the ha'echol and just set it down on the floor. You don't have to actually.
Yes.
No, but you don't have to actually take the dirt and put it underneath where the tile would be, so it's
on
actually
the floor.
Just,
so
yeah. Yeah. Isi ben Yehuda, I'm a lovely karka shilav in nova given a base elamim. Isi ben Yehuda says that the words karka mishkan come to add that this applies not only to the original mishkan in the midbar, it also applies to the same thing as done in Shiloh, when the mishkan was in Shiloh,
yeah.
And in nova and giva in the temporary places.
The occupied territories.
Yeah. For base elamim and the permanent base mikdash. Now Rashi discusses the question. Maybe it shouldn't say those. Shiloh is Mishkan existed in Shiloh. There shouldn't be a need for the pasuk. There shouldn't be a need for the pasuk to add Mishkan Shiloh. And as far as Noiv and Givon, on the contrary, you shouldn't have been able to do it over there because there's a rule that in a Boma, which is Noiv and Givon had the status of a Boma Gdola because the Oren wasn't there. No. A bama could be used for Avodah Zarah, yes, but the basic meaning of a bama is a high place. It means, basically, a bama is, a so to speak, a non-official mizbeach.
Right.
You have the original mizbeach that was in the Mishkan. Later on, the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh,
right.
And later on, eventually, in Yerushalayim.
Right.
In between, you have the 14 years when they were conquering and dividing out the Yisroel, when the Mishkan was in Gilgal. And after Shiloh was destroyed, when it was in Noiv and Givon, the Oren was not together with the rest of the Mishkan. During the 14 years that they had it in the battle camp or whatever, during Noiv and Givon, it was in Kiryas Yearim and then in Yerushalayim, whatever. So at that time, it's the very same Mizbeach that Moshe built, whether that Pesalo built, whatever you want to call it. But it's not called a Mizbeach at that point. It's called a Bama Gdola. And the halachas of it are somewhat different than those of the Mishkan of the Beis Hamikdash. In particular, Rashi points out that you can only bring on their korbanos. That you can only bring korbanos over there that have a fixed time. You can bring a korban tamid on the bama gdola. You bring the korbanos of the yom tovim, etc. But not a korban that doesn't have a fixed time. There's a korban of the sota doesn't have a fixed time. Therefore, you can do the whole ritual of the sota in noiv and givon.
So no korban yachid in
a way? Not no korban yachid, but not a chovas yachid. Not something that a person is obligated to bring, but where there's no fixed time for. So there's no chatas, no asham. And therefore, no mincha tzoyta. So therefore, Rashi argues that the girsa over here should actually be just lahavi karka beis elamim. That the mishnah that the pasuk asheyev a karka mishkan comes to add not only the mishkan but also the beis mikdash. But you shouldn't need to say shiloh because that was indeed a mishkan, and you shouldn't say noiv and givon because those you couldn't have done it. Tosfos and Tosfos Shant discuss it a little further. There are different opinions on the subject. On the contrary, Tosfos said that maybe precisely because Noiv and Givon are only considered a bummer, therefore we need a special pasuk to add them. Tosfos doesn't talk about Shiloh. Maybe with Shiloh, I mean, you have they use the curtains of the Mishkan, but they didn't use the beams of the Mishkan. They built stone. A stone structure and covered it maybe therefore you need a special pasuk to be ma'abed. Okay,
no,
whatever.
Givon, there were towns. What were they?
Yeah, Noiv and Givon are both towns in the territory of Binyamin. After Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, the Mishkan was moved to Noiv, and then it lasted there for about 12 or 13 years until Shaul wiped out the whole wiped out the whole city at Shaul's command. The whole thing where he thought they were conspiring with David against him, and then after that it moved to Givon and it was there for the next 40 odd years. Until Shlomo HaMelech built his mikdash.
Where was Givon?
Givon is also in the territory of Binyamin. Both of them are broadly speaking, near Yerushalayim. I think nowadays both of them may even be within the municipal borders of Yerushalayim. I don't know. Anyway. Isi ben Menachem, and it's sort of, you don't need a pasuk to be marba the Beis Mikdash. Well, marba tuma kala lechilek hakosuv, madach when it comes to a lighter tuma, for example, a person himself becomes tomei, let's say by sheretz or tumas mes or whatever, there's no difference. The pasuk does not distinguish between the mishkan and the Beis Mikdash. A person is chayav karetz for either one, and that's called tuma kala in the sense that it's not chayav mitzvahs based in, it's only karetz. And yes, there's no difference between the mishkan and the Beis Mikdash. So when it comes to the tumah of an eshes ish, which is more serious, which involves the chiyuv mitzvah based in, if it was eidim v'asara, like kol shekein, how much more so? There shouldn't be a difference between the Beis Hamikdash and between the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. Im ken ma tam bei der kaka mishkan. So what do we need the words in the, on the floor of the on the ground of the mishkan? Shall you have a mitzvah kopase? It just means that you shouldn't take some dirt in a basket and bring it into the heichal. You have to take from the actual dirt on the floor of the heichal, and if not, then like the first braisa said, you have to place it over there. So in other words, we have a machlokes between the two braisas. The first braisa that said that specifically the dirt you bring in, if you don't find loose dirt over there, that you have to directly put on the ground over there underneath the tile, that is according to Issi ben Menachem in the second braisa. The second braisa, the Tanna Kamma and Issi ben Yehuda disagree with him. They would say we learn other things from the Kaka Mishkan, and therefore not necessarily do you have to put the dirt on, not necessarily do you have to spread the dirt on the floor over there. It would be enough just to bring it into the hay hole in a basket. So now the yeshiva life had a question. Ain't shom ofer, what if you don't have any dirt over there? Maushit, loose dirt that is, maushit an afer. Can you use ashes instead of dirt? I'll live with Bishama like Tiboyloch. Now, according to Bishama, and Basilil have an argument in Cholin. So one thing Mepharshim point out is, the vote is, given that the best thing, according to everybody, is to take dirt from the actual ground of the Mishkan, so if it happens that there's no dirt available over there, what is better, to bring in some dirt from the outside, or to bring in ashes that were from the Mizbeach, from the Mishkan itself, yeah. So now, in Cholin, Bishama and Bishul argue about Kisri Adam. What can you use for Kisri Adam? We know the Pasuk mentions offer, dust. Does it have to be Davka dust, or can it be ashes as well? So Bishamai argues over there. We never find that ashes are called dust. We never find
relevant to this.
Because that's what we're going to say. It's the same kind of thing. Because Bishamai says over there, we never find afer, ashes, is called offer, dust. Therefore, the two terms are not interchangeable. Therefore, if the Torah says that you have to cover the blood with offer, then you can't use afer. Whereas Bishul argues out of Pasuk that says that where we see that it is called offer. May afar straight as a hatas. From the dust. May afar, afar is the nisma. May afar straight as a hatas. You're supposed to take from the dust of the burning of the parah adumah and put it in water and use it for the fire. And that's not dust, it's ashes. So Bishama answers back, okay, it's called afar strafer, it's called plain offer. The point is, you have a machlokes whether offer includes afer. So I'll look at Bishama, loyti boilach. So according to Bishama, you have no need to ask. The Amri Lomot Sinu Afer Shkari offer. They say you never find afer, you never find ashes being called offer. Therefore, obviously, if the Torah says by the Slota, you have to take me to offer, I should give it. Haka Mishkan, fine. According to them, it has to be offer, not afer. So the question would be, according to Basil, the Amni Mapsinu Afer Shakari offer, they say that you have that pasuk by the Parah Adumah where we see that Afer ashes is also called offer, dust. You know, the two terms are interchangeable. Right, so what would be the thing? Do we say Afagabja Ikri offer? So even though it is true that the Torah uses the word offer to mean ashes as well, nevertheless, Hacha B'Karka Mishkan Ksiv, here it says that it has to be from the ground of the Mishkan, which means, in other words, it's not just plain old offer in the generic sense. It has to be something that is found on the ground of the Mishkan, namely dust, not ashes. The words b'karka mishkan are extra, maybe, to tell us that it has to be that. Or we could say, like we said before, that Issi ben Yehuda, Issi ben Menachem have their various things that they learn from B'Karka Mishkan, either that we include Shila and Given and Rav and so forth, or that it means that you have to spread it on the ground. So then according to that, then the B'Karka Mishkan doesn't tell us that it can't be ashes. Incidentally, by the way, Tosfos Shans pointed out something over here. When we say that according to this Shammai, ashes are not considered dust, is there a difference what the thing was before it was made into ashes? Well, in other words, is there a difference between ashes from wood or ashes from food, for example?
What do we ask the question?
Well, the point is that because Tosfos Shans points out that the first Mishnah in Beitza says that if you shecht a wild animal or a bird on Yom Tov, where you're supposed to do Kisi Adam, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to shecht the animal unless you have loose dirt available, because you're not allowed to dig up dirt on Yom Tov. But the Mishnah says, she'efer kira muchan, who both the Shammai and Bissel agree that ashes from a stove are considered already ready to use, and therefore if you have ashes from a stove, then you can use those. Lou, if the Shammai is saying you can't use ashes for Kisi Adam throughout the year, why would Yom Tov be any different? Obviously, Tosfos Shans says there must be a difference. What kind of ashes does the Shammai say is not considered offer? Ashes from something that could have been used for food. For example, a parabuma, it's an animal, it could have been used for meat. On the other hand, ashes from wood, Tosfos Shams wants to say, even according to the Shammai, definitely would be considered offer. That's just a side thing. Yeah. Anyway, so back to the Gemara then. So the point of the question is, so can, according to the Hillel, can you use ashes or not? Tashma, the Amr of Yechon and Meshur Mabishmal, the Shloshim Akoimus Halacha Ikeves Mikra. There's three places where a Halacha Lamosh Mishinai comes and overrides, or not overrides, yeah, kind of overrides basically means the same thing, but Rashi sort of says like destabilizes Mikra, the Pasuk. Rashi says that Ikeves is Meloshon Okev. The Okev, the heel, is what you stand, it's what you rest your weight on. A keves means like move the heel away. Like you move somebody's heel and you destabilize them, you make them fall. Halacha, a keves mikra would mean then basically that the Torah comes in, the halacha, the Moshe Mitzina comes and uproots the simple meaning of the pasuk. Tells us that the pasuk uses a certain word, but it doesn't mean only that. It means something else. We'll talk in a second what the three are, but I'll just tell you, by the way, the Aruch has a different explanation of halacha, of this word akeves. He says akeves is actually related to the pasuk in this week's parasha where Esav complained by Yaakov eini zeh pa'amayim, that he complains that Yaakov supplanted me, Yaakov replaced me twice. He took my bechor, and now he took the brachas. So halacha akeves mikrog means sort of that the halacha mishmina sort of substitutes for the simple meaning of the pasuk. Okay. Replaces it. Number one, a Torah Amab the offer. The Torah says that you have to cover the blood of a chay or an oif with off. The pasuk uses specifically the word offer. The halacha b'chaldavar. But the halacha is you can use anything in which plants are able to grow. And Rashi gives examples. You can take a brick that was ground up, for example, and use that for kisei adam. You can use plaster. You can use chalk. You can use a bunch of different things.
So it's interchangeable.
So even though the prophet says the offer, nevertheless, halacha Moshe Mitzinai tells us it's anything in which plants can grow. Well, you see, when sawdust, or yeah, when they use sawdust by kaparis.
Maybe by that.
That's what we're saying. For Shloshim Akomis, there's three specific psukim. This is one of them. Where even though the Torah used the word for offer, where you would think it means zavka dust, nothing else, but halacha Moshe Mitzinai comes and tells us that no, you can use other things as well. Like Marav Kulin points out over there, also you can use gold dust. You have a pasuk that refers to gold dust as offer.
Gold dust.
The offer is the hub law. The pasuk in here. Yeah. Yeah. Number two, Hatorah Amar Batar. The Torah says that a nazir has to shave his hair. The Torah says that a nazir is not allowed to shave his hair with a razor, as we learned a great deal about in nazir. But halacha, hold on, but the halacha of Moshe Mitzinai tells us not only a razor, but also anything else. We learned over there. If he uses scissors, if he rubs it off, or whatever, then he's also. Which Rashi points out an interesting thing, by the way. On the face of it, that's not akiva, that's adding. Mainly the first one, offer, you're saying it's not only offer, it could be all kinds of other things that are not any relation of offer. But how is it over here? You're saying that a nazir can't do tar, and also he can't do other things. Rashi explains this is called akira, because what would happen, instead of adding, why? Because we learned over there in nazir, that if a nazir does this, if he cuts his hair too close to the skin with scissors or whatever, he'll be chayav malchus. Now, ordinarily, to give malchus for a person without the Torah's sanction is an isser in itself. Lo Yosef, you're not allowed to hit another yid, except where the Torah gives you license to. Therefore, if we're saying over here that the person is going to get malchus over here, implies that we're actually taking away the simple meaning of the pasuk. It's not only tar; it's anything else that removes the hair closely.
And that's
halacha Moshe Mitzinai does that. And number three, so that's the second one. Number three, a Torah Amr Sefer. The Torah says that a get has to be a sefer, which sefer in Tanakh doesn't mean a sefer like what we're learning out of. It means a scroll. It means a piece of parchment or sort of like a sefer Torah or whatever. It means something written on parchment. But halacha, hold on. But halacha is you can write a get on anything. You can write it on paper. You can write it, as she says, on olive leaf. Yeah, also halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Rashi points out, by the way, that all these three things, now in the respective Gemaras that deal with these things, the Gemara finds psukim that imply each of these things. So on the face of it, it's not halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Rabbi Shmuel, though, would hold that those psukim are only an asmachta. The real din that you can use something else for a get, or you can use something else for kissy adam or whatever is alachal mishmei sinai. You have an asmachta for it in the pasuk.
Why do you need an asmachta then? If
okay, because you need an asmachta because you don't need an asmachta. It's a mnemonic. It's a way of remembering it. It's a way of demonstrating the strength of it, whatever. Rashi also mentions, by the way, Rashi also quotes from the Yerushalmi that actually the taking out the one about the razor with the nazir, because after all, it was a little hard to understand. Okay, you know, he's not allowed to shave with a razor. He's not allowed to shave with other things also. That's not really oiker. Right. And rather, it puts in instead marzea, namely that the pasuk says that when an eved Ivri wants to stay past 6 years, right, the master takes a marzea and pokes a hole in his ear. But the halacha is it doesn't have to be an awl, which is used for punching holes in leather or whatever. It can be anything else that makes a hole. You can use a nail. You can use whatever. So that would be another example of halacha keves mikra. And Rashi says actually I like that girsa.
Because
it makes better sense than the tar thing. Yeah. Okay. Thus far, what Rabbi Shmuel is saying, you have those three places where halacha mishmei sinai tells us that the simple meaning of the pasuk is not really what it means.
Now, so what about?
Well, right, the imi, the lechem ami hai. So now, if you're going to say that in the case of the soita you can use ashes, not just dirt, then you have a fourth example, which Tarsus discusses the issue over here what are we trying to prove from a statement of Rabbi Shmuel? Fine, I mean. If you say that Rabbi Shmuel holds like Beis Hillel, fine. What is Beis Hillel saying? The word offer itself automatically includes ashes. You don't need a separate limud for it. You don't need a halacha mishnah.
Yes. Okay.
So the Tosfos leaves it as a question. Okay. Anyway, the answer is
no answer.
Tosfos leaves it unanswered. I think the Sfasemis gives an answer, but I actually don't remember what it is. Okay, the answer is ton of a shire. You could say, as Gemara does in a lot of places, okay, he listed three, but he means there's others as well. He doesn't mean it's not an exhaustive list necessarily. Okay, then the whole question is always, am I shire to I shire? Fine, then what else did he leave out? As we always say, if you leave out one thing, it means you left it out because you don't hold of it. Whereas if you left out two or more, fine, you know, you didn't bother listing all of them. So what else could he have left out? The answer is shir mitzora. He left out the din by mitzora. Titania, we learned in a bright. So the pasuk says, now we learned in Nazir, that a mitzvah has to shave twice. Once when he first gets healed of his nazir, of his tzaras, and the kohen does the thing with the two birds and the water, which we'll talk a little bit about it on the base. Then he waits a week, he shaves his hair, he goes to the mikveh, he waits a week, then he again shaves his hair, goes to the mikveh, and the next day he brings his karbonis.
So the second time he shaves to go to the mikveh?
Both times he shaves and then goes to the mikveh.
So why both? That's
what the Torah says, he has to go to both. So the second time it says, the pasuk says, "Vayyom bayam ashvi yigalachas kol sora." It says the limpus and nazir as well. On the seventh day, shave all his hair. That is klal. That's a general statement. Es roshe v'eskonev es gabav v'sein prat. And the Torah mentions three specific parts of his body: his head, his beard, and his eyebrows. That's a prat. V'eskol sora yigalach kol zav kolo. Then the pasuk continues, all his hair he should shave. That's another klal. So klal a prat a klal. You have to don elakein a prat. As we say every morning in davening, then it means that you only include in the klal similar to the prat. Ma prat mefurish, so just as the prat is specified, makom kinos seir v'nira, it's a place where you have a collection of hair which is visible. Afkom makom kinos seir v'nira. Then also it means that the nazir has to also shave every place else where there's a concentration of hair which is visible. A concentration of hair, meaning as opposed to, for example, his arms and legs, where it's not so concentrated, it's more spread out, and visible, as opposed to, for example, hair inside his nose, or his armpits, or whatever, yeah. So that's what we're going to say. Yeah, that's a kral, a prat, a prat, yeah. Ma rabi, so what are we including? What's another example of a concentration of hair that's visible? Rabi say araglaim, we're adding also the hair between the legs. The pubic hair.
Ma Rabbi means
what are we adding? When we say we have a prat of klal, we have a klal of prat of klal. So we're trying to say the klal includes everything in the prat plus everything else that's similar to it. So besides for the hair, the beard, and the eyebrows, what else do you have on the body which is a concentration of hair which is always visible, as opposed to, for example, the armpit, which is not necessarily because it's only visible if you raise your arm. So we're adding Rabbi Seir Araglayim. We're adding the hair between the legs. It's Seir Aglaim, it means the pubic hair, but Rashi says, listen to Malyam, not that. We're using nicer language.
It's visible.
Well, it is. When you go to the mikveh, it's visible.
Oh, you're saying
Yeah, where it's visible when you know. Yeah. Yeah. My meat.
You can see it when.
Yes. My meat, meat, the beis hashachi. What is it excluding? It's excluding the. It's including your. It's excluding your underarm hair because that you only see when you when the person lifts his arms. Or the kulei gufa and the hair on the rest of the body. We're also the same thing. It's not. It's, some of it is visible. Some of it is not. But it, on the rest of the body, it's not so concentrated. It's not concentrated. The hair on the chest, on the arms, right there. So thus far we have then, based on the klal of Pesach klal, it would seem that the nazir only has to shave then his hair, his beard, his eyebrows, and his pubic hair. But the hilchos megaleach kedoas. But the halacha is that actually the nazir, the second time at least, has to shave his hair as smooth as a pumpkin, meaning get everything. It's not. We learn in a Mishnah in
so that's
it,
not just
there's an example of halacha keves mikra. And we learn in a Mishnah in Negoim, Bolo lahakif as a mitzvah, the Kohen comes to shave the mitzvah, Mavir Tara called the Sora. He passes the razor over his entire skin. V'chatani, that's the first time. V'chatani Sefer, and then the Mishnah continues, V'yem Hashvi Megalcha Tiglachas Shneirka Tiglachas Vajrena. On the seventh day, he shaves him a second time, exactly like the first time.
Meaning everything.
So the first time, Mela, the Pasuk, so the first time the Pasuk says the Gilach has called the Ore. So fine, you can say it means everything. But the second time, given that you have this klal of prat klal, which seems to mean only those four areas, and yet you're saying everything, there is another example of halacha ekeves mikra. So if Rabbi Shmuel is not counting it, then that means so far we're up to five cases of halacha ekeves mikra. He only listed three. Good, he listed three, and he left out two. He left out the soita, and he left out the and he left out the mitzvah.
Because he didn't want to list. Because
he didn't want to bother listing everything. Omer of Nachum Yitzchak, not necessarily. You could say kikah chashav halacha. Not necessarily. Can you say that? He left out the mitzvah just because it's a longer list and he may have left it out for a different reason because it's not relevant to the type of list he's trying to give. Ki kachoshem halacha ekeves mikra. He would only be counting ones where the halacha of Bishmi Sinai overrides or uproots or whatever, however you want to translate it, the literal meaning of the pasuk. Ha ekeves midrabbanan. Here you're saying it's uprooting something which is only midrabbanan, meaning something that we learned out with father throughout the father, which is one of your middos, Shatzer and Nidrashas fan. Now, interesting thing. Meaning, in other words, it's not the pasuk. When the pasuk says the offer, for example, the Torah openly says the offer. They have to cover blood with offer. We don't need any yugim midas chater and adreshes for him to learn that. Here, how do we know that the mitzvah has to shave his pubic hair as well as the three that mentioned in the pasuk only from something that's not bonum learned out with the yugim midas. Now, it's interesting. The Rambam has a shita that anything that's learned out with the yugim midas chater and adreshes for him is considered dirabonum. The Rambam writes that in the introduction to Sefer. Well, he says in the introduction to Sefer Mitzvah, that is why, in general, anything that's learned out with the Yud Gimel Midos, Shatzer and Adreshes Bam, is not counted as one of the 613 Mitzvahs, with a couple of exceptions that he mentions various places. A couple of them, the Gemara says, are considered Gufei Torah, but by and large, the Rambam and many others disagree with him on that. One of the Gemaras that comes up in that discussion is this one, because we see over here, we're calling something that's learned with the Yud Gimel Midos, the Gemara Kohen, the Drabanim. Which the other Mephoshim answer,
the Ramban disagrees
with the Ramban.
Ramban.
Yeah. So,
the halacha is like the Ramban.
Halacha, I mean, it's a matter of counting what's considered one of the 613 mitzvahs, one not. It's not necessarily a difference in halacha. It's a difference in how do you count the 613 mitzvahs. What do you say on Shavuot night? You know, and it's not really a difference in halacha necessarily. But other Mephoshim point out that actually the Girsa in the Gemara over here shouldn't be Midrabanan, but rather Medrash. In other words, what probably happened was somebody in their copy of the Gemara wrote Mem Dalad Resh Kit, meaning it to stand for Medrash, and by accident they understood it to mean Midrabanan. Be that as it is, the point is that we only know the pubic hair from Yud Gimel Midas Shatzer Nidresh. That's not what Rabbi Shmuel was trying to list. So therefore, you could say he didn't. It's not that he knew of the case in Mitzvah and left it out. That's a different kind of thing. Therefore, so far you only have one that he left out, Soita. And you can't just leave out one. That implies he doesn't hold of it. That would imply that he would hold that you can't use ashes, to go back to our original question. Rav Papa, I'm going to publish a different answer. What Rabbi Shmuel is counting, the three cases that Rabbi Shmuel is counting, is where the halacha uproots and overrides what the Torah says. Yeah. Meaning, of it, like, for example, the Pasuk explicitly says that you have to use offer for Kisi Adam, and we're saying you can use other things. Ha, 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 keves, by sefesi. Over here, what we're saying is you're including, you are still doing everything the pasuk says. You are doing roshes, tana, and gabes enav. You're just additionally adding one more area of the bottom. That's not called a keres. That's not called a halacha a keres mikra.
A keres means just
a thing. Means that we're replacing like what it says in the pasuk.
So offering also makes it offering.
Because you couldn't use offering.
You mean? The offer.
Okay, but since the difference is that the difference is that here the pasuk is listing three specific areas of the body, which makes it sound like it's meant to be an exhaustive list. But we're not. We're adding. We're saying a fourth thing. Offer sounds like it's not a matter of a list. It's saying only offer, nothing else. Now, there's a difference between when the Torah is giving a list and we're saying, okay, it doesn't just mean those three, it means the fourth one also. Versus when the Torah is saying a certain substance and we're saying, but you can use lots of other substances as well. That's called halacha a keres mikra.
Okay.
Yeah. And the same thing with sefer. Yeah. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Hamasnisir mani Rav Shmuel. This braisa that we quoted before that mentions the klal of prat klal is in fact according to Rabbi Shmuel, the darish klali of prat. He darshens the whole Torah using the klal of prat method. That's what we have in the braisa of Rabbi Shmuel. Is klal of prat klal is one of his methods.
The whole Torah, that's like
any place in the Torah where there's many places we talked about this another. There's many places where the Torah will give a general statement and it'll give a specific statement. Sometimes it'll be klal of prat, sometimes it'll be prat klal, sometimes it'll be klal of prat klal. We learned in Nazir about there's going to be prat klal of prat as well, which is subtly different. So Rabbi Shmuel, when he sees that kind of thing, he always darshens it using this method of klal and prat. Follow prat, prat klal, follow prat klal, etc. On the other hand, to the last, Mani, but the Mishnah in Negoyim that says that he has to be shaved as smooth as a pumpkin, that is Rabbi Akiva. That is the point of Rabbi Akiva. The Dorish Rabuya Umiyuti. He darshens such things differently. He uses a different method. He uses, yes, we learn this another. He uses the method of Ribui Umiyut. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, the pasuk starts off on the seventh day you should shave all the hair, riba. That includes everything. That includes everything. That adds everything. That reduces it to only those three. That's called riba. So instead of Rabbi Shmuel, it's klal of prat klal, which klal of prat klal would mean we take the prat and we use it to derive a general class. Anything that can be made to fit in that class, kinner say or venira, then that goes. So even though, as opposed to ribui or mirut ribui, basically means we're going to include everything except for something that is the least similar to the ones that are listed. Rabbi Shmuel, in other words, will say, we talk about this a lot in other. Rabbi Shmuel would say, the klal of prat method tells us that we look at the characteristics of the things that I mentioned in the prat. We find other things that have those exact same characteristics, and only those are included. So in this case, what else on the body exactly matches the same things as Roshes, Kone, Gabbatenev, is Sar Haraglayim, and if we had only that. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would say, let's look at, you have Roshes, Kone, and Gabbet, Enov, they're a concentrated thing of hair, they're visible, therefore we have to include anything that's either one of those, any concentration of hair or any hair that's visible. The only thing we're going to leave out is something that's the least similar to any of them.
And Rabbi Shmuel would say
we look at things that have the same properties as those. Such as that kinder say or venera, it's a concentration of hair and it's visible. Rabbi Akiva's ribu umiyut method would say either one or the other. Yeah. So ribu umiyut riba, riba hako. By adding another ribui, the Torah is adding back in everything. My riba, riba de kulei gufei. So what are we adding? We're adding the hair on the whole body. My mit, what are we excluding? Mit seir shemasecha choytem. We're excluding the hair inside the nose. Which the Rambam writes that's because the hair inside the nose is not visible at all. The Ravid argues with that, and he says no, a different reason. The reason is because not everybody has nose hair. Or hair everywhere else on the body, most people have. But the nose hair, not everybody has.
Some people don't.
That's the point. That's the Ravid's point. In other words, so the Rambam's point would be that the nose hair is the least similar to Rosh Hashanah and Gabbat Einav, because never visible, or almost never. Almost never visible. The Ravid's point would be it's the most dissimilar, least similar to Rosh Hashanah Gabbat Einav because almost everybody has hair on their head, at least at some point in their life. Almost everybody has a beard, at least at some point in their life. Eyebrows. Not everybody has nose hair. Therefore, it's the least, and everybody has pubic hair, and everybody has arm hair and leg hair and so forth. Yeah. Bottom line is that according to all these various answers, you don't necessarily have any reason to think that Rabbi Shmuel, when he gave his list of three things, the halacha, kevas mikra, that he left out the case of the metzorah. Because we could say that it's not part of the category that he's trying to describe. Or he does hold that he does hold maybe that the metzorah only has to shave certain parts of his body, the ones that the pasuk mentions, plus the pubic hair, or that it's a kevas mikra, whatever, according to the different reasons. So far, all we're left with is that if we were to say that by soja you could use ashes, then you'd have four. Rabbi Shmuel only listed three. Therefore, that implies that he doesn't hold of it. My havi Allah, so what's the bottom line? What is the din as far as that? Which Tosfos points out, the point of the question is, after all, I mean, you could say, according to one of these answers, that therefore Mitzorda is not appropriate to add to the list, and therefore you don't have five, and instead he only listed three. But maybe not. Maybe you could say, okay, you know, you have all those answers, very nice. But after all, maybe Rabbi Shmuel should have included it. After all, you can't be sure. Tashma, d'amar avuna ba'ashi amarav. Actually, it says on the side, ein sham offer. If there's no dirt over there on the floor of the Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash, maybe rak bubis yerek umakadosh. Then you can bring decayed vegetables. Rak bubis in Russian rakov, like we learned another about rakov ames. This is similar. You have vegetables that decayed and are turning to dust. Basically, you can take those and you can take that and use it for the meisaita. The lohi, okay, but it's not meant to be good stuff, right?
But I mean, how can you use that because it's by itself?
You know what? If she's if everything is good, then the Eibishter will protect her. And if not, then she's gonna blow up anyway. You know. The lohi, the Gemara says, but that's not really so. On the face of it, in other words, the point of it is, if you can use rakbubis, then you can use and then you can use ashes.
Right.
The lohi is not necessarily the same thing. Rakbubis yerek hu dahavoy offer. You could argue that decayed vegetables end up becoming dust. Paper, lahavoy offer, whereas ashes are not going to become dust. In fact, there's several different. The Rashi over here is not goyis v'loihi. So what the Rambam holds, the Rambam understands our Gemara to be saying, since we can't be sure, you can't use ashes. You can use rakbubis because you have Rav Chiya Ashi telling us that, but you can't use ashes because ultimately we're leaving it unsure. Sort of like the Gemara is leaving a teiku whether you can use ashes or not. Therefore, don't use them.
Who says that?
The Rambam. What Rashi holds is different. There's different understanding of what the different understandings among the Achronim of what Rashi holds. Given that Rashi is not gerdus the words v'loihi in the Gemara, does Rashi then say that the Gemara is saying that rakbubis is like ashes? That if you're able to use rakbubis, then the logic should be that just as well you're able to use ashes. Or on the contrary, is the Gemara saying that you can use that you can't use either one of them?
According to Rashi, you would only use.
According to Rashi, maybe you could only use offer. The Mishnah continued, Kadesh Yiro Alamayim, that you use enough dirt, enough dust to be visible on the surface of the water. Tanarabana, we learn in a Braitha, Shloisha Tzrichim Shiro, there's three cases where something has to be placed and it has to be visible, there has to be enough of it to be visible. Afar Sota, the dust for the Sota. The Eifer Parah, the ashes of the Parah Duma, that you have to, you take some of the ashes and sprinkle it on the surface of the water to make Parah Duma water. There has to be enough ashes that's visible on the surface. The roik yivama and the spit of a yivama, which we learned in yivamas, that part of the chalitza ceremony is that the yivama spits on the ground in front of the yavam. There has to be enough spit for the dayanim to be able to see it. No, even though the pasuk says the yavam b'fanav, doesn't mean she spits in his face; it means she spits in front of his face on the ground. You may remember we learned in the Gemara over there the interesting question: what if the yavam is tall and the yavama is short? What if the Yavama is tall and the Yavama is short? So, like, when she spits, it's not in front of his face. In the name of Rabbi Shmuel, said there's a fourth case, also the blood of the bird. The first stage of the Masurah Tara, when the Kohen takes the two birds and shechts one, and then he has a cup of water over there, which the Gemara talked about that yesterday in connection with that we learned from that you have to use a kli cheres for both of them. you take water, you take Ezev, Ezev, Shnitelas, you take two birds, you shech one of them into the water, and you take the other bird and the rest of the stuff and dip it in, and sprinkle it on the Metzora, etc., at the beginning of the Metzora. So you have to. So Rabbi Shmuel is adding a fourth one, also the blood of the bird. There has to be enough. There has to be. You use a small amount, enough of water that the blood should be visible still in the water. My time with Rabbi Shmuel. So what's Rabbi Shmuel's?
Always
the Tosfos asks that. The Tosfos asks. We say in the Mishnayos that we learned during Yerbis Chodesh. We have the case of it. A shlosha lugim mayim, v'nafal seven kauter of yayin, v'ara meren k'mara yayin. You have three lug of water, a kauter, which is 1/64 of a lug of wine, falls in there, and then the whole thing turns the color of wine.
Right.
How much more so blood?
Exactly.
So Tosfos says what we mean over here when we say over here nikar behem, we don't mean just that you can see the reddish color. We mean you can see the mamushes of the blood. You can see the actual substance of the blood. So for that, you need a much smaller amount of water. If you have too much water, then you'll see a red color. You'll see a red color in there, but it won't be discernible that it's blood. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Okay, my time at Rabbi Shmuel. What's Rabbi Shmuel's reason why he adds that? Just give the tovel oisim b'damat tzipor v'gomer, because it says that you dip all of them, the live bird and the aseret, etc., into the blood of the bird and the mayim, the tanya, and we learn it in b'leisa. The pasuk says badam, you dip them in the blood. Yachol badam v'lo b'mayim. You think maybe you only dip them in the blood of the shechted bird, not in the water. Tam v'lo b'mayim. No, because the pasuk also mentions the water. B'mayim yachol b'mayim v'lo b'dam. Tam v'lo b'dam. You have both. Okay, said maybe mayim shadam tzipur nikar b'hen. You have to take an amount of water that the blood of the bird will be recognizable in it. Again, that you'll be able to recognize the blood. Yeah. V'kam a revius. And how much is that a revius? A revius of water. Tosfos discusses the issue that does everybody agree to that, or maybe the Rabbanon who don't seem to hold of that din of Rabbi Shmuel, maybe they hold use a larger amount of water, maybe they hold use a half a log. Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of that. In fact, the Mishnah in the Goyim does mention that you use a half a log. A half a log is two revius. But we said before that one Mishnah in that Perek was according to Rabbi Akiva, so it may well be that whole Perek is according to Rabbi Akiva. It could be. Having said that, actually, our printed Mishnayos actually say Revis, which would be according to what Mishmal is saying. Okay, anyway. V'Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? The answer is Hahula Gufe. You don't need that's not teaching us anything about that the blood has to be visible in the water. Oh, we need the words Badam and Bamayim just for the actual simple understanding of the Pasuk. Jahu Kamar Nachman, Akka Badam of Bamayim. Simple. The Pasuk is telling us you have to dip into the blood and into the water. You have to dip into a mixture, not just one and not just the other. Rabbi Shmuel, what would he answer to that? Fine, if that's the case, then the Pasuk just has to say he should dip it in them. But Dam of a Mayim Lomali, why does the Pasuk have to repeat that there's blood and there's water? If we already know that, we know a bird is chested and we know he took water to begin with. Lomali, the Nikar. Obviously, you must need that in order to teach us that the blood has to be noticeable in the water. Vir Rabbanan, and what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They would say, Yikasa Rahman of a Tov Behem. Yes, but if the Pasuk only said you should dip it in them, have I'm in a high lechude behind lechude, you would think, fine, maybe it means you dip the live bird and the aseret and so forth in the blood, and then you dip it in the water, or vice versa, or whatever.
One after the other,
not that they're both mixed in the same container. Kasamachmana, but Dama Mayim Arvan, so therefore the Pasuk mentions blood and water, meaning they have to be mixed. Vir Rabbi Shmuel, what would he say to that? Fine, he says you have a different pasuk that says they have to be mixed. The pasuk says it's two pesukim only. It says you shech the one bird over an earthenware container, over spring water, over living spring water. So obviously then the blood goes into the water, so necessarily they're mixed. What are they answer to that? If you had only that pasuk, have amina, then you would think that's not what the pasuk means. The pasuk doesn't mean that you shech the bird and let the blood run into the container with the water. Have amina, we would think what it means like this. The word al in Tanakh doesn't always necessarily mean on. Sometimes it means next to. For all of Masa Menashe, for example. No, Allah Parosh is actually... Yeah, whatever. The point is that sometimes the word Al means next to. So when the Pasuk says that you have to shech the one bird, Al Klicheref, Al Mayim Chayim, maybe what it means, not necessarily into the water, lishchate samoch lamana, you should shaft it next to the keli, v'nin katinu l'verdidin, then what you do is after you've shafted it, hold the verdidin, the jugular veins, tightly, so the blood doesn't drain out right away, v'lakablu dam b'mana achrina, and then catch the blood in another container, and then you dip the
you compress the...
Yeah, in other words, you shaft the bird over the container with the water, but you don't let the blood actually drip into that container. You compress it, you hold the neck tightly, till you move it over to the next container, an empty kli cheres, an empty earthenware container. You let the blood go into that. Then you take the living bird and the eight cheres and so forth, and dip them into one and dip them into the other. Right, in order to prevent us from thinking that, that's why the pasuk has to repeat that you have to dip them that you have to dip them in blood of the dead bird and the living water, meaning that it has to be mixed all together. That you don't do that. You do shech the bird and let the blood run directly into the water. Kamash Malan, so that's why the pasuk needs to tell us that. So therefore, the Rabbanon argue that you don't have a pasuk to teach us that the blood has to be noticeable in the water, and therefore you're not necessarily limited only to a revius. So Rabbi Yirmiyah asks Rav Zeira, you're telling me that the idea is you need a revius of water because that's the amount that the blood of the bird will still be noticeable in it. What if you have a large bird and it's so large that the blood overwhelms the water? You shech the bird in there and the blood goes in and you can't even see that there's any water in there. It looks like all blood.
What's the question?
That it's kind of a nitchas with namayim, but what if it's a really small bird and there's only a tiny bit of blood and therefore you don't notice it in the water? Mahu, what would be the din? Meaning, do you maybe change the amount of water depending on the size of the bird?
You need a revius before.
Well, that's what the question of Ishmaelah said. That's the question of Ishmaelah saying you need a revius.
Right.
But why necessarily? A revius may be enough and may not be enough. So why are we saying a blanket statement, a revius? So Tosfos points out that the question has to necessarily be only according to Ishmaelah.
Because again, according to the Rabbanan,
it doesn't matter. Now, we find in a lot of places in Shas, Rabbi Yirmiyah does this kind of thing. He asks these questions, like, can we assume that the shear that the Chachamim gave for something is precise? We had this in Ksubas, for example. We had this in Sukkah. We had it in a few places. Amalei, so Rav Zera tells him, Lava minalacha, haven't I told you before, don't take yourself out of the rulings of halacha, meaning what halacha says, the amounts that halacha says are taken as a given, they're an axiom. The Rabbanan made this estimate on the basis of using a tzipor dror. A tzipor dror is a small bird, maybe a sparrow or something like that, whatever, it's a smallish bird. There's no tzipor dror that is large enough that the blood of it will overwhelm the water. And there's no one that's so small that the blood of it will not be noticeable in a revius. In other words, one thing, some of the Chavoshim explained, the point is a tzipor dror, there's a Gemara in Beitza that implies that a tzipor dror, the babies are about the same size as the adults. So therefore, there's not a great deal of variation in size, unlike with a lot of other birds, where the baby birds are tiny and the big one and the adults are much larger. With a tzipor dror, there's not a great deal of difference. So the Chachamim figured it out that there's not enough of a range in size of a tzipor dror for it to make a difference.
Very good.
Yeah. Turn it up on. We learned it applies. So, Hiktim are going now. Still in the case of the sota, hiktim offer lamayim posel. If you put the dust in the keli before the water, then it's posel. Reb Shimon machshir. Reb Shimon says it's kosher. My time with Reb Shimon. What's Reb Shimon's reason? Just this: the pasuk says v'lok kol atomei me'afar strefe v'chatas. The pasuk says when it comes to the parah adruma, that you should take some of the ashes. What we said before, offer literally means dust. So that's, of the burning of the chatas. The tanya amar Reb Shimon v'chi offer. Who? What do you mean? It's not dust that you're taking from the parah adruma. Vala efer with ashes. The pasuk b'davka uses the word offer over there rather than efer in order that we can use it for gzeira shava. Nemakan offer of nemalahalan offer. You have offer by the parah adruma. You have offer by the soita. Malahalan offer agave mayim. Just like when it comes to the soita, you have to first put the water into the keli and then put the dust on top of it. Afkan, the same thing. The same thing with the parah adruma, offer agave mayim. The dust has to go on top of the water, not the other way around. Umakan hikdim offer lamayim kosher. However, just like when it comes to the parah adruma, if you did put the ashes into the keli and then poured the water on top of them, then it's kosher, v'di'evet. Achlachalam. The same thing about the Sotah. Rabbi Shimon would say, Hiktim off the Mayim kosher. Unlike the Chachamim, who are so... Both the Parad, that's the thing. He's learning a Zeder Shabbat.
You reverse the order.
Then you can reverse it for the other. And the Chachamim don't agree with that, right? It's interesting, by the way, the Zohar, when the Zohar talks about the Parah Aduma, and it mentions that the proper order is you put in the ashes and then the water. And I saw a considerable discussion about that, because according to what we're saying in the Gemara here, the Chachamim say that's outright possible, and even Rav Shimon, the author of the Zohar, only says it's Tosha B'diyeva. So somebody wanted to say that maybe actually the two Tanoim who disagree about within what Rav Shimon said. Rav Shimon is actually not the author of the Zohar, it's Talmud Rav Abba wrote it. So there may have been two different Talmudim of Rav Shimon who had different understandings of what he held. Or Gemara presents one of them, that he says it's kosher b'dieved, and the Zohar presents the other one that says that he holds that that's the proper way to do it. Or not, that either way is fine. The halacha is like a chachamim, that you have to do water and then dust in both cases, otherwise it's possible. The Hossam and Nolan, okay, so where do, so by the Parah Aduma, where do we get, according to Rav Shimon, that it's kosher either way, that you should do it water first, then ashes, but yeah, but it's okay the other way. The reason is Shrei Troi, because you have two psukim. Ksif Olav, you have a pasuk that says that you place on it, on the ashes, Alma Eifu B'Reisha, which implies that you put the ashes in first, and then V'Nosan Olav Mayim Chaim, you place on it water, so it means you pour the water in after the ashes.
You
take for the tomei from the dust of the burning of the chatas, but not on all of mayim chaim, and you place on it mayim chaim, which implies that you pour water onto the dust. Mayim chaim al keli. But on the other hand, the pasuk continues that you pour living water, spring water, into a keli, alma mayim bereisha, which implies the water comes first. There's nothing else in the keli before the water. Okay, so what does it mean? Rotsa zen noisen, rotsa zen noisen. So you can do either way. V'Rabbanan, what would the Rabbanan answer to that? No, they would say El-Keli Davka. The word El-Keli is Davka. It has to be that you put it into the Keli first. There cannot be anything else in there first, and if you do, it's possible. What does the word Olav mean for Arvan? The word Olav does not mean that you pour the water over the ashes, in the case of the Parah Aduma, and also in the case of the Sotah. They say that it means you have to mix them. After you put in the ashes, you do have to put water on it, meaning you take the water that's in the keli already and mix it around, so some of the water goes on top of the ashes. The aim of olav, dafka el kli shetecha yusin the kli. Maybe say the other way around. Maybe olav is meant particularly, that dafka means you put in the ashes first, then the water. And what does el keli mean, shetecha yusin the kli? It would mean that the water has to come into the keli directly from the spring. Maybe it would mean, in other words, you can't fill up with one container and pour it into another. Chayus in the kli, that the chayus of it has to be in the keli, that you fill it directly from the spring. The answer is no. Mama tzina b'chomakam machshir l'mayla. We find elsewhere that the thing that makes the thing that makes the water kosher for its use is supposed to go on top, namely by the sota. It says that the pasuk says that you put mayim kedoshim b'kulcharas, and then you put ashes on top of that. Afkan machshir l'mayla, the same thing over here. When it comes to Parah Aduma, what makes the water kosher to sprinkle on a tongue and neck has to be that the ashes go on top. You put in the water first, and then what makes that water fit to be for use for the tomei is the ashes. And therefore, the Chacham would say it has to be that way. Just to finish off, by the way, the Yerushalmi says an interesting word. You have those three ingredients, basically, in the sota's drink. There's water, there's ashes, and there's the ink from the writing that the Kohen does, which we'll talk about in a couple of days. What do those correspond to? They correspond to the three things from Pirkei Avos: Zama Ayin Basa, Olama Taholich, Lifnei Mehavet also Litin Din Vecheshbrin. The Ayin Basa, you come from a Kippah Surah, that's represented by the water. Olama Taholich, where are you going? Lamakom Ofer Rima Veseleya, to the grave, to the dust of the grave, therefore the dust. Who are you going to be giving a Din Vecheshbrin in front of the Eivishter? That's represented by the writing from the Torah that's erased into there.
Will we
set that? Be your family.